This is Annie Prue. I will be reading from a speech that Pierre Trudeau gave in 1968 at the unveiling of a statue of Louis Riel. Riel was a 19th century Métis revolutionary whom the Canadian government tried for treason. The late Pierre Trudeau served 4 terms as Canada's Prime Minister. Before his rise to power, Trudeau was barred from entering the United States in 1952 after attending an economic conference in Moscow. The State Department feared Trudeau was on the wrong side of the Cold War, but he also got into trouble in the Soviet Union for throwing a snowball at Stalin's statue. At the dedication of the Riel statue, Trudeau said, 83 years ago in the mounted police barracks in Regina, Louis Riel awaited execution as a convicted traitor. This afternoon we are assembled to unveil a monument in his honor. No man in Canadian history suffered as many reversals of fortune during his life. He was, in turn, unofficial leader of his people, president of a provisional government, founder of the province of Manitoba, fugitive in exile, member of parliament, outlaw, leader of another provisional government, and prisoner. Yet it may be that none of the twists and turns in his tragic biography will be as important to the history of this country as the reversal of official and public opinion which this monument symbolizes. We are in a beautiful garden. About us are the handsome government buildings imaginatively designed. Behind me is an important monument. These things are evidence of the goodness of life in Canada, of our ability to combine human and physical resources to make our land rich and productive, of our talent to govern ourselves by democratic processes, of our recollection of the harshness of the frontier and its occasional injustice, of our determination to make a better life for ourselves and our children. Yet this very setting, this very tranquility, this sense of orderliness and propriety makes me think how difficult it is for any of us to understand Louis Riel. What forces motivated this man? What social conditions led him to believe that nothing short of rebellion would serve the cause to which he had pledged himself? How many other Riels exist in Canada, beyond the fringe of accepted conduct, driven to believe that this country offers no answer to their needs and no solutions to their problems? How many of us understand the loneliness, the sense of futility of such a man? How many of us are willing to concede that future historians, in chronicling the events of our lives, may choose to emphasize and applaud the activities not of the privileged majority, but of some little-known leader of an unpopular minority? For me, this is the lesson of Louis Riel. For me, this is the reason why we are here. During his life, Riel aroused the fiercest passions among his compatriots, and the manner of his death was a cause of deep division throughout Canada. The controversy has not died, as we know from the stream of books, plays, and most recently an opera, which continue to be written about him. But in the perspective of 8 decades of our history, perhaps we can agree on the underlying themes which make an understanding of his turbulent career so important to us. For those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. We can agree that Riel's dream of a vast, autonomous Métis nation-state in the middle of North America could never have been realized. The economic and political momentum of the 2 young countries which share this continent was too great to justify or to permit further fragmentation. That Riel could make his dream appear plausible to his followers is a testimony to the force of his character, no doubt. More important, it indicates the bitterness of their frustration. Both in 1879 in what is now Manitoba and in 1885 in what is now Saskatchewan, Riel and his followers were protesting against the government's indifference to their problems and its refusal to consult them on matters of their vital interest. questions of minority rights have deep roots in our history. A democratic society and system of government, while amongst the grandest of human concepts, are among the most difficult to implement. In a democracy, it is all too easy for the majority to forget the rights of the minority and for a remote and powerful government to ignore its protests. It is all too easy, should disturbances erupt, to crush them in the name of law and order. We must never forget that, in the long run, a democracy is judged by the way the majority treats the minority. Louis Riel's battle is not yet won. That is why I suggest that we should never respond to demands for just treatment by pointing to other examples of injustice. If a certain right is attacked or denied in one province, it is not a valid reason for refusing similar rights in another. Yet such excuses are offered, and this leads to a vicious circle in which no improvement in human liberties is possible. The rights of individual Canadians are too important to be used as bargaining counters. Every government must accept responsibility for the rights of the citizens within its own jurisdiction. Canada as a whole suffers when any of her citizens is denied his rights, for that injustice places the rights of all of us in jeopardy. We could find examples of rights denied or abused in many parts of Canada, but perhaps most obviously in the fields of education and language. We have a blueprint for a functional bilingual state in the report of the Royal Commission, and with the collaboration of all governments, we are beginning to build it. But it has taken us 100 years, and the job is far from done. All around us, in many foreign countries and here in Canada, we can see the disastrous results of ignoring the universal demand for human rights and freedoms. Confronted by the lessons of our own history and the disorders of the contemporary world, we will bear a heavy responsibility if we fail to provide an adequate response. Nor should we believe that governments alone can handle these problems. In a democracy, the ultimate and essential protection for individual liberties lies within each citizen. Only when the vast majority of citizens comes to understand and share the feelings of minorities will justice truly prevail. Only when minorities are given the opportunity not just to be heard, but to participate effectively in the democratic process through responsive political organizations, can we be reasonably certain that our society will not produce another Riel tragedy. We pay tribute to Louis Riel as a fighter for the rights of his people. Those who share his thirst for social justice should preserve his memory in their minds and hearts. To learn more about ideological exclusion, go to www.aclu.org/exclusion.